to the Able Voice Podcast, where your voice is more than a melody, planting seeds in the growing field of clinical music therapy. It's the Able Voice Podcast with Haley and Kim.
Hello and welcome to another debrief. I am so excited to jump into this conversation or recap of our conversation with both the lovely music therapist from Sophie's Place and our chat with Roya about her work and contribution to empowerment of those that are non-speaking. Kim, I'm wondering if you have any general ideas or thoughts after listening back to the episodes from either Sophie's Place or our conversation with Roya.
I have lots, of course, but I think the main one that stands out to me is just a humbling reminder of how we are listening to people and how we're being intentional in the way that we enter spaces and in the way that we, you know, connect with people. I think I've been having a lot of these conversations with an intern and with some colleagues and some students that have been coming into my circle recently, just about specifically with Roya's conversation of like, how do we know that what we're doing is quote unquote the right thing to do? And how do we know in some instances that this is actually, you know, needed, especially in working with individuals who are not verbally able to advocate for themselves, as well as kind of knowing those distinctions between, you know, when is someone showing us that they don't want to be here, or when are they just having a normal response? When are they having a grumpy day? When are they feeling upset, which often comes up in sessions? And so I just found it very fascinating, but also important to delve back into that conversation of listening when someone says no. And I think it sparked some of these conversations, I don't know about for you, Haley, but for me, of resonating on when is it really no? And when do we use those clinical judgments to say, they said no, but maybe I'll try a different way, or I'll invite a different way in case that's not what they meant? Or no, they're consistently telling me no, and now I have to advocate, or it's my role to be able to advocate for them getting what they need. So I felt like that was such an underlying theme of obviously that episode with Roya. But I also love the parallel between that and what they're doing at Sophie's Place, because Sophie's Place, you know, anytime I think about facility-based music therapy or hospital-based music therapy, it's not always a pleasant environment to be in. You know, there's all these beeping things. There's people coming into your room at all times. There's so much chaos that makes it not feel like home, or makes it not feel like a motivating place to be at. So the ways in which we physically set up the space or separate the space from someone's room, or which is not always an option, but the ways that we can do some of those subtle things to make it just a little bit of a different shift so that people can be in those spaces to be thriving and to be present and to not be distracted by everything else, I think really sets up the space for it to be somewhere that people can actually make those active choices about their care in whatever way they're able to do so. And it's our job to be able to listen deeply to find out what they're really saying.
And I think it's so special that that is a part of our job. Like you said, it's our job to listen. There aren't many professions or occupations out there where I think when they're giving their job description, listening is on the job description. But if you were to, I don't know, if you were to give a job description about a music therapist, or like list out all the things that we're actually doing in terms of tasks that we're responsible for, listening should be at the top of the list. It's so interesting because I've had conversations recently with several people about this separation or this duality between, yes, we're going in to do a job. We have a job to do. But at the same time, it's equally as important as part of our job to deeply care about the other person's experience in therapy. In both episodes with Roya, there was this deep, overwhelming sense of care that she was expressing for the clients that she has worked with, and her call to action beyond that workspace to advocate for them in the writings that she was doing. And same in Sophie's place, you could see that it was so important beyond just meeting the goals on your checklist, beyond showing up with all of the right songs and all the right tools and all the right things that we can get caught up with as music therapists. It was really important for the therapists at Sophie's Place to deeply care about the experience of that person. And that came down to setting space. It came down to listening, as you mentioned, and creating a place where that person could feel like their best selves in that moment. And even if they weren't, to validate that part of their experience, like what they're feeling is valid in that moment. We're not always going to be happy. We're not always going to want to, you know, bang drums at full volume, but it's so important to build connection with people and to show genuine care and concern for that person's well-being. And I think that's my favorite part of our job.
That's definitely a highlight of the job for me as well. And I think that's such an important point too, right? To let people be in a space that they can be their best self or their favorite self or just themselves in a world where people are often, you know, masking or in a setting like this of constantly being sent off to therapies. We have a tendency to kind of hold ourselves to that. Oh, yep, I'm doing this for that person and this for this person, even though it is for me. And so creating that space where it's okay to, yeah, let's just sit on the ground. And if we're rubbing a drum because we're low energy or if we're not doing anything, that's allowed.
And to be in spaces where you're so out of control. Like there's so many things that are happening around you where you're not in control of what's happening to you, and both in the setting of a hospital and when you are non-speaking, that can often lead to the people around you constantly making decisions for you on your behalf. Yeah. And in the space of music therapy, we're there to hold you up and try to figure out what it is that you want. What are you trying to communicate? What is it that you need? That's an experience that doesn't happen too often within those settings or within those parameters. With music therapy, it is that permission slip. It is that place where you can make decisions and make autonomous decisions for yourself and your care. And that in itself is a beautiful thing, a beautiful opportunity. I think anybody could relate to the feeling of just having some sort of control in a circumstance where you often feel out of control. And so just giving somebody that platform to advocate for themselves and to be in control of what they want and what their needs, you know, like sometimes we don't know what we want. And I'm speaking for like me right now. Sometimes as humans, we don't know what we want, but the feeling of somebody being interested to learn, it makes you think, oh, you know, I've never thought about that part. Like, what do I want? I appreciate somebody even caring that much to ask me how I feel or what I want when there's so many things sometimes that can be the opposite. The world tells us this is what we want. In a hospital, nurses are telling us what we want. If we're children, our parents are telling us what we want. And when we're non-speaking, sometimes people don't have the patience to wait for us to communicate our wants and needs.
Very true. Yeah. Well, for sake of ease, will we move somewhere sooner? Will be decisions will be made in that circumstance? And I'm similar. Like, I don't always know what I want. I'm a very indecisive person. And when I get overwhelmed, which I would absolutely be in those circumstances, or when I'm seeking care for myself, I get overwhelmed sometimes. But at the same time, I might be overwhelmed and not know what I want. But as soon as someone starts saying, okay, well, here's the plan, it's too much. It's even more, because then you really see that lack of control, even though it's this weird dichotomy between, I don't know what I want, but I don't want you to tell me. Having that space where, yeah, it's it's okay to not know what I want and have someone who genuinely cares enough to be curious and to try and help me figure that out in a patient and like empathetic and welcoming space without making the choices for me and still making it okay for us to be able to like just be in there and be in that, you know, be in that gray space for a bit, because sometimes it's not this, it's often not this neat, tidy bow, and it's okay to go through these cloudy periods and it's okay to not know, but it's important to have the space to be able to figure it out on ourselves or figure it out for ourselves. So I agree that music therapy really can be that place where the expectations drop a little bit. And sure, we might encourage and we might challenge. And I think that's a really important part of our job too, especially once we have the treatment plan and once those goals are established. But coming back to the listening and the connection, I think that's where it's so important to be communicating and listening deeply and understanding why people are coming for their goals, not from mom and dad's goals or nurse's goals. Or of course, we take those into consideration because those are the reasons that people are being referred or they're part of the care team. But at the end of the day, it's this individual that we're working with. And so those goals and finding out how do we really hear what they want and what we should be working on and how do we give emphasis to that within our work together.
And as a clinician, so this is a question for you, Kim, and myself too, because I think I have some sort of answer around this that might be useful for other people to hear. But as a clinician, when we work from this kind of person-centered lens, it can be like stepping into the unknown a little bit in terms of we don't know what we're going to get. On that day, when we walk into a space with somebody, we don't know how they're going to feel, what they're going to want on that day, what's going to make the greatest impact for them in that moment. And so how does a clinician prepare for that kind of session when you don't know what the day will bring or what, you know, what that, how that client is going to meet you in that music therapy space?
That is such a fantastic question, Haley. And I'm laughing a little bit simply because I think all of my sessions this week ended up like that. What I've learned, I think, in the past 6 months, actually, is that a lot of preparation for that has to do with me trusting my therapeutic instincts and tools that I've built to date and still going in with, you know, my session plan and taking the time to be intentional about the session plan, starting with the goal, starting with the person of, okay, these are the types of things that will help us work towards the goals that have been set, but knowing that they might not be the prominent goals in the session. So I tend to kind of have like a little bit of a backup plan, but more than anything, being versatile with the interventions that we choose. For example, let's say we're working on speech, and I have a song that is going to prompt a lot of fill in the blanks or something like that. Being adaptable enough to, okay, say maybe I had 10 spots where we are going to fill in the blanks and this person is super low energy. Maybe I just do one in the chorus, or maybe it becomes something receptive and they can fill in where they want. So I've started looking at my session planning kind of almost as contingency planning a little bit. And I think it gets easier once you get to know the person you're working with and you can start to see, you know, what does a low energy day look like for this person? Because even that is unpredictable. Someone who's having a really challenging day may still be able to and want to engage in musical play, whereas another person might say, I just want to lay on the ground or in my bed and I just want to listen. And so for me, it's really helpful when, as I get to know someone, but even at the beginning of the process, I think having that mindset of, okay, this is what I'm coming with today. I've maybe brought a couple extra instruments or a couple extra songs in my pocket and have that flexible mindset. And then I kind of give myself a little bit of a mantra or a little self-talk beforehand, just knowing that you can always come back to breath. Whenever I feel overwhelmed in a session or I don't know where to go or what I had planned is completely gone and I've gone through my backups, you can always come back to just that moment of breathing together, that moment of finding grounding together. And I know that that also helps to regulate me in the moment if we do, because sometimes you really, truly don't know how to plan and something completely surprises you in session. And it's important for us to be able to stay on par and in alignment with our participants as well. So that's always like a little, it's almost like a flotation device for me to know that like, I don't have to be perfect. I'm not a perfect human. I am a clinician and I don't have all the answers. And so to be able to just say, I don't know, let's breathe for a minute or let's just kind of connect and let's use the music or our breath to realign and then go from there.
I love what you said about trusting your intuition as a therapist and the skills that you've built to date. I think that's really important. No matter what stage of practice you're in, you've built a certain amount of skills. Lean on those in those moments when you feel like you're stepping into the unknown or feel like, you know, your plan is not working out as intended. But also going back to listening, like we said at the beginning of this episode, because 9 times out of 10, what I've learned in my experience is that the client will let you know what they need. If you just pay attention and listen and come back to breath, like you said, even if it's a really tough day for them and they can't fully express what they're wanting from you, but you can follow and match their breath with the music. You can let them know that you're there to be with them in community, and that, you know, they don't have to be alone through whatever it is that they might not be able to put words to in those moments. I have a group, and I've come across many groups like this over the course of practicing, but there's one group that I have right now where I have no idea who's going to come into that group every single time I have it. I have a vague idea of like who the regulars are of people that come often, but there could be a different mix up of people. It's really hard to plan for a group like that in the sense of having individual goals for people. And I have these general goals for the, you know, group of people that I'm serving. But at the end of the day, it's really hard to plan because depending on who's coming into that group and their energy levels and the way that I know that they like to interact with the music, sometimes the plan I come to the session with has to go right out the window. It keeps me on my toes. And I kind of like those sessions because it challenges me and it pushes me and reinforces the fact that not every 2 sessions are the same. Like you could do the exact same intervention with somebody and get a completely different response the second time you do it, third, fourth, fifth time you do it. It's really interesting to see how we connect with music in our different states, in the different ways that we're showing up in any given day. And it's really pushing me and stretching me as a clinician, but always coming back to what you said of trusting your skills and your intuition and leaning on that, just listening and being someone who cares for the other person's experience. I think that will take us far, no matter where we are, no matter what setting, no matter how long we've been practicing. Those are the things that are going to carry us through.
Listening to the Able Voice podcast. If you want to hear more episodes like this, subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media at Synergy Music Therapy.
You can also find links to our most recent and top-rated episodes on our website at www.synergymusictherapy.com.